There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
Thank you to our subscribers and members of our listening audience.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Faub, my co-host. Nasser will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial in the second part of the show. This is podcast number 319, December 11th, 2008. Steven?
This F1 Weekly Podcast brought to you by the all-new 2009 Motorsports Memories powered by Turbo Calendar, a pictorial tribute to the age and rage of the Turbo era. Incredible images in large format, a pictorial tribute to the greats. Cruising the streets of Monte Carlo, Nelson Piquet belching flames and testing, Nigel Mansell in black and gold GPS Lotus, and many more, now available on our merchandise page. Get one. You know you want to.
Thank you, Steven. And of course, we thank Motorsports Memories. On today's program, Hyundai and the vacuum left behind. Blemmy impresses in Jerez. Is Kurz a bad idea during these economy times? Cosworth back in Formula One and Motorsports Mondial with Nasser Hamid. And of course, I should say economic times. I'm bumbling a little bit because I still can't believe it. Honda has pulled out of Formula One.
I think your scarf's too tight.
The scarf, it is winter now. But Honda pulls out of Formula One. Your thoughts, and what was your first reaction when you read this?
At first I thought it was a rumor that, you know, oh, Honda's pulling out. You know, there wasn't
you
really
thought
anything.
Rubens Barrichello was pulling a fast one.
Yeah, you know, something was going, you know, that it wasn't. To me, it seemed too abrupt. There was no other, you know, talks or anything of that nature. It's just like, bang, okay, we're done, we're getting out. I'm like going, don't you guys owe a lot of people a lot of money for another couple of years? You know, like Jenson Button and Ross Brawn and, you know, some of the staff. So it really surprised me that it was a kind of a surprise. And then when it was like, okay, now we're looking for someone to buy the team, I'm kind of going, okay, huh? But, you know, of all the manufacturers, they're the one car that never seemed to have any outside sponsorship. Or if they did, it was, you know, it was like minimal, it was like Ray-Bans, you know.
Right. Yeah, like, I mean, they had
no big sponsor, you know. Typically, like McLaren and Mercedes. McLaren and Renault and Ferrari typically have a big one, you know, like Santander
ING.
Bank and or ING. And Marlboro's been bankrolling Ferrari since forever. And so those guys you wouldn't expect, but Honda's, you know, Earth Dreams. Oh, huh? Who's that?
Yeah, no, Honda didn't go the sponsorship route. They wanted to be pure and clean like the Earth and seem green. And I thought the concept was nice and, you know, it reflects well on a company that builds combustion engines. But in the end,
yeah, ultimately bankrolling the entire team, especially in a modern Formula One team, you've got teams out there who are busting hump to get sponsorship who are having a hard time making ends meet. And as a manufacturer, average team's expenditures was in the $250 million range or better. To bankroll that all yourself out of your profits or, you know, your marketing budget or whatever, that's a lot of money to put up all on your own.
Especially when you're having to close factories for 50 days because you're not selling cars. I mean, when those cars are piling up in the parking lot, you realize and the income is not coming in. This is a global problem. Obviously, here in this country, the three General Motors, Chrysler, and Ford up in front of Congress begging for money.
Well, actually, it looks like they're going to get some bailout out of that.
Well, I think Chrysler will probably end up being bankrupt or swallowed by General Motors. But still, I was surprised when I read that Honda was pulling out. I was absolutely stunned because, like you said, it happened so abruptly. But they have come out and said they're going to continue funding the team until March. Everybody will get their paycheck. Obviously, it's not going to be gung-ho. They're not going to be testing. And now, Ross Brawn has said, the technical design team is already reconfiguring the car to handle a Ferrari motor because they're hoping that there's going to be a buyer somewhere. The problem is the reason why Honda is pulled out, the global economy is in the tank right now, and it's who's going to come into Formula One right now? David Richards, he's the biggest possibility, but
he's had a slot for 2 years now that he hasn't used.
It
kind of makes sense for a guy like Richards to maybe step in, but the problem becomes for him is he needs someone to bankroll him because he's not going to have the reserves to pick that up. It would be a nice pickup for him because he could basically get himself a Formula One operation, which is part of the reason he hasn't got in, because he didn't have the capital to build up that end of it. But still, like you said, nobody really wants to jump into what amounts to a $250 million a year expenditure to be there, not necessarily even competitive.
Well, obviously that expenditure is going to come down with the new rules between FOTA and the FIA, and they're coming up with cost cutting, which they have to do.
But the problem is most of that doesn't really fall into effect until 2010.
Well, there'll be a lot of cost cutting in 2009 because they have to. I mean, sponsors aren't going to fork out as much money as they used to because they don't have the money.
Yeah.
And everybody's portfolio is in the tank, including, Nick Fry was talking about maybe some investors in the Middle East, but their portfolio's in the tank as well.
Well, when gas prices here, my local gas station, the price has dropped by more than half.
I agree.
Over what it was
exactly
at the height of summer. And so OPEC's going, what happened? There's just a little trickle coming out of that pipe of cash now.
Yeah, no, so I don't see what's going to happen, and I feel sorry for Jenson Button and Rubens Barrichello. Once again, I have to reiterate, I think Rubinho should have retired, but of course he didn't see this coming, and we'll see what happens with Jenson Button. The only seat available is Toro Rosso.
And now, it sounds to me, at least in the articles I was reading during the week, that if Jenson walks up to Gerhard Berger and goes, can I have that seat? He's got it.
Well, Gerhard Berger's out already.
Well,
he sold his share.
Dietrich Matrich.
Yeah.
Basically, it's kind of his for the taking at this point. You know, it kind of basically means Rubinho's bounced because, you know, well, let me see. Button, Rubinho, 32, 46, you know.
Rubinho's gone.
Yeah, I don't see
him. Unless he says he'll work for free.
And then he probably end up as a test driver.
Exactly. So anyway, the doorman has just waved to me that Nasser is coming through the executive front gates. And he is here. Nas, how are you? Welcome to the studio.
How am I? Well, thanks to the flu shot. And you mentioned the winter. I am pleased to say I am braving the chilly California winter very well.
Good for you. I just get the scarf. I skip the flu shot.
Yeah. And how is the Duke of Dijon otherwise?
The Duke of Dijon is doing well. I'm at home a lot, and I've got some activities that I do on a daily basis now. Buying, selling, stuff like that. But I'm having a good time.
What, you know, Mr. eBay now?
It's possible. You never know. But, I'm still stunned over this Honda thing. A quick comment on the Honda thing, and I know you're going to get into it heavily. And, of course, the Motorsports Mundial.
A team pulling out does not surprise me, but Honda pulling out was a big shocker to me. I could not believe it. If it was Toyota, it would not have surprised me. And I think among other teams, you know, Ferrari is going to be there as long as trains are running on time in Italy and they're making the proper stops in Predappio. And Mercedes will be very hard to pull out because they have a lot of money invested in McLaren. They bought the Elmore engine concern, so I think they will be there for a few more years.
Well, that and they're using that as a badge on some of their product line, so they're kind of getting some turnover out of it that other teams may not be.
Yeah, and BMW has made a long-term commitment I don't expect Renault to bail out soon because they run a very lean operation, thanks to Mr. Briatore.
Well, that, and they've got their toes in so much other racing too.
Yeah, so the team that would have pulled out, I would have been not surprised at all, was Toyota. But surprisingly, they have said, you know, that's a very cash-rich company, so hopefully they'll stay, and I'm hoping that somebody will buy the Honda franchise, and we will have, like Bernie Ecclestone said, you know, the world is not finishing tomorrow. So there will be Formula One, there will be hopefully 20 cars, but still a big surprise. It was, you know, I've said it many times, my favorite Formula One team, so a little disappointed.
I agree, but so we lost Super Aguri, we lost Honda, that's four cars. Is it almost time to ask the teams to run three cars? That way we can get pick up employment in the driver's section. It's been done in the past.
Yeah,
it's not that unusual.
Actually, at this point, I think it may be a little bit premature. If we lose another team, say before the start of the season, you know, before Cindy decides to pack it up, or one of the Toro Rosas goes by the wayside, then maybe it makes sense to at least ask the top, you know, the top three to run three cars to get a couple more cars out on the grid. But I think until you basically, unless we get to the around the 15, 16 car point, that's kind of the tipping. I think the tipping point for trying to get into running another car is yet more cost incurred by those teams that manage to stay in.
I know, but they could pick up some sponsorship money with another car, you know, showing off their wares on the track. Nance, your thoughts?
Well, the structure of Formula will have to change, you know, as many things will change with this financial meltdown we have. You know, Formula One, you have to have both cars look almost identical. That's where Bahrain ran into a problem when they had that, you know, 5-5-5 and lucky strike. So they may have to change that rule. And but, you know, if a team fails, there will always be buyers. There's a price for everything. You know, this guy, Adrian Campos, ex-Spanish Grand Prix driver, and his business partner, Senor Agag, I believe is the name, they've been making noises to buy a Formula One franchise. So if somebody can buy a Formula One franchise for £1 from Honda with fabulous facilities and get money from whatever the sources they may have, and there is people who have money still have money. You know, if you have $10 billion and you lose 50%, you still have $5 billion.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of, and David Richards, you know, he has very good contacts in Middle East, and somebody will jump in, get the franchise.
Do you believe that?
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely, because there's a price for everything.
That's true.
Yeah, basically, it's an opportunity to get a Formula One franchise and a complete Formula One operation for literally pennies on the dollar if you really want to run Honda hard as far as negotiating the sellout. You can, you know, you basically get an operation that probably cost them $1 billion to put together over the past 5-10 years.
With some good leadership with Ross Braun.
Yeah.
And an excellent design team. I mean, you'd be, well, Ross Braun says that, you know, we could be mid-pack.
And they could be with the changes in the formula, so to speak. Anybody really can kind of make a jump forward if they just make the right tweaks at the right moment.
Yeah, look at Toro Rosso.
Now, do you ever watch the BBC America news here
on our local public television station?
Is it on local, whatever channel
it
is on?
Okay. You can get on BBC America too.
I do.
Yeah, I was watching the other day, and they had an interview in the news with Ross Braun. And the lady asked him, you know, what is the worst-case scenario for Honda, for your team now? And he said, worst-case scenario is we have some of the best facilities here and equipment that other Formula One teams will come and they'll just, you know, take piece by piece. That's but I think,
as we used to call it, parting it out.
Yeah, exactly. But I still think, you know, that somebody will, and Honda is going to help them get going. You
right,
know,
Honda's
which is
being,
yeah, which is nice of them. They don't want a complete egg and sushi omelet on their face.
Exactly, which
and
would be a terrible thing.
Yeah, it's a very respectable name in the history of motor racing and the auto industry. And that's another reason I'm disappointed that they're bailing out. And so we'll see what happens.
Okay, we'll have a little bit more on Honda later on in the program. Let's quickly go. I've been picking up some chatter.
Well, are you in touch with the Tricky Dick now?
Of course. And apparently Ferrari and Mercedes aren't too happy with this KERS thing. It's costing a lot of money to develop when we know we're trying to cut costs. And they have been lobbying to maybe get rid of this K kinetic energy recovery system. Because in the end, get that out of the way, cut it, and they'll save a lot of money, even though a lot of money has already been spent on the development of this since the rules were changed last year.
Yeah, some of that money can be recovered by the teams that have done it in their production line, you know, in their production vehicles. And I agree, you know, if we're trying to cut costs in Formula One, why do we try to come up with a technology that really doesn't exist in a racing format? And it doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, if you're going to use a kinetic energy recovery system, you should be racing fully electric cars so that, you know, you can get a boost from having the additional energy in your batteries. So I actually would like to see the KERS shelved or dropped completely for at least, you know, 2-3 years until the economy kind of gets back on track. And we can, you know, if we get teams dropping out, it's not a time to be bringing in a new technology that is basically very expensive to develop because it's kind of from scratch development.
Yeah, we'll see. I think the FIA is going to comment on this in the next 2 weeks or so, right after the Christmas holidays. Yeah. But we'll see what happens. I'm hoping they drop it, Nasser.
Well, you know, I don't understand if they want to reduce costs. They've gone to, like, they're talking about three engine good for three races, maybe four now. Why not go to a rule where you have to use the same car for two seasons? You know,
that would help the small teams.
That would save a lot of money.
That's a good idea. I'll email Max first thing in the morning.
Yeah. The other thing that is interesting is that, you know, they all across the boards this afternoon was the fact that the FIA and FOTA have come to agreement on a bunch of cost saving measures, and that was it. That's all they said.
I know. Well, it's all
give
secret.
Why are they trying to keep it a secret?
Well, just like if the FIA coming out and saying Renault has signed on with the Cosworth spec engine, and then Renault the next day says, we never said that.
Yes.
That didn't come out of our press office. That is poppycock. We are with FOTA at the moment.
Yeah.
And speaking of the spec engines, it's official. Cosworth's been signed, so they're back in Formula One. And that must have been a big deal. I mean, the last Cosworth was a couple of years ago in the Toro Rosso, and now they're back. It looks like...
Well, the last Cosworth was a V10.
Yeah, and they're going to be looking for four teams to at least sign on, or it's not going to work out. Where do you guys see this spec engine thing? Because I know Ferrari and Mercedes... Ferrari and Toyota have threatened to quit F1 if it goes to a spec engine.
And I would expect that Renault would be reluctant to stay in Formula One with a spec engine. It doesn't, you know, again, the manufacturers are in to promote their product. And if you start running, you know, somebody else's motor in your car, it kind of makes you look a little weak when you're trying to be a machismo, you know, manufacturer.
Especially when you're trying to sell cars. I mean, Ferrari, you know, they sell a high-end car, and they're going to sell them whether they're in Formula One or not, as far as I'm concerned. But Renault, this helps Renault, especially in South America and Europe. I don't think the spec engine thing is going to work, but Max is stubborn as a mule.
Yeah, again, it's one of the... Okay, where is he? How come I haven't heard him speak out on KERS recently? You know, he's all big on the spec engine, and it's... He runs out and he gets the quote, so to speak, for the motors from Cosworth. You know, basically he's granted the contract. Well, he's got no one else on the other side of the paddock buying into this. You know, Max sometimes, you know, maybe he's taking one too many whips to the head.
Yeah, I don't know, but, you know, some people do call him Spanky, so we'll see what happens. Quickly, before we go to break, we had testing in Jerez yesterday, today. Sebastian Buemi, on the top of the timesheets, both days. Bourdais, to me, it looks like he's in trouble. Sato is a half a second behind Buemi. Any predictions here, guys?
Well, the way Buemi's going, looks like he could really run himself into a seat. But again, I think we've talked about this before, that he could really benefit by a year's seasoning in GP1, or GP2, I mean. Jumping up to the next level, and maybe he's got the talent. Maybe the big car suits him, so we'll see.
Well, I think a lot of this testing is really not reflecting what's really happening out there on the track, because Toro Rosso, including Renault, are still running 2008 front wings, unlike McLaren and BMW, who have been running the newer front wing and less aero on the cars,
right,
and the smaller rear wing in the back. I thought the McLaren looked pretty good today.
The McLaren looked nice. There was another picture in the set that I was looking through, and I swear the BMW looked hideous.
The BMW is not as attractive.
And I don't know if it's just because of the white. The one nice thing about the McLarens, the way they paint them, they really kind of blend out some of the really rough edges so they get a much softer look. But the BMW, the stark white with the wide nose, especially when they the photo with the slicks on it, it just looked like it looked like a pig.
Yeah, no, the BMW doesn't look that well. I was really disappointed that Renault or Toro Rosso are still running the 2008 looking car, but of course they're running 2009 setup and 2009 spec tires.
Yeah, and I'm not sure now how much data can you drag out of that car without at least the aero changes to at least get some data, because I noticed the one thing about that front wing, especially in the McLaren, it's pretty, the nose on the McLaren looked much narrower all the way out to the end of the car, which seemed kind of odd. The suspension components almost looked like they'd been kind of compressed to be even smaller. And then it's basically a single element wing with a couple little winglets instead of the major composites that we were seeing at the end of the year last year.
I'm already getting used to it. And Sebastian Bourdais and Takuma Sato are both now fighting for that one seat by raising money, looking for sponsorship. Even Bourdais has admitted, yes, I am looking for sponsorship. Anybody.
You know,
hey,
if you
Amora Mustard, go. Talk to them.
If he were smart, he'd go back to his old sponsor of the team that he was in a champ car.
You mean McDonald's?
Get Mickey D to come in and back him.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Why not? Talk about a global presence. They've got the cash to back him.
That's true. But as far as I'm concerned, I think Buemi has got the seat because he's done an outstanding job in this testing. Nasser, I want to get your opinion on Buemi and your thoughts on the new McLaren front wing.
I do like the McLaren car very much, and you know, I was thinking when I was looking at it that if you go back to the 1982 season, that season had probably one of the best looking cars. The Renault was very good, the Brabham was very good, Ferrari 126C2 was a beautiful looking car. So I like these cars with all these add-ons and, you know, pylons going on. So I do like the change there. Regarding Buemi, you know, it's looking more and more that he is Red Bull's love child, and Sebastian Bourdais is their stepchild, which is very sad, because I was having a conversation with somebody today who's been following racing for a long time, and we came up, you know, we basically said the same thing, you know, throwing a good driver against a Sebastian Vettel or a Alonso or a Hamilton, you know, it's not fair to the driver. You just need to give some guy some room to breathe, you know.
I agree.
So you think if they brought in Buemi and they got Button to take the second seat, would Buemi rattle Button's cage?
Remains, you know, I don't think so. I'm going to tell you why. Buemi has not even rattled Romain Grosjean's cage, and they've been racing together for the last few. They were together in GP2, and they were together in F3 Euro Series. Both occasions, Grosjean had his number. But Buemi is a quick driver. He just needs some more. You know, it's like the Scott Speed thing. You know, they put him in Formula Renault. And Formula Renault 2 liter, and then boom, right away they put him in GP2 1 year, which was quite a jump. And then 1 year after GP2, when he did not even win a race, they threw him in Formula 1 with back of the bus operation. So that's just like really putting a lot of pressure on a kid who does not have the experience, who may have all the credentials and the talent, but you don't have the experience. And I don't think that's a fair way to go. But then, you know, life is not fair, so people should not expect Formula 1 to be
fair. A lot of these kids have got people who've invested a lot of money in them and want the return.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the reason they're running them up the pole so fast, to get the return on that investment.
Yeah, it's throwing them to the wolves. See, it's like the Kimi Raikkonen thing, you know, 23 car races going to Formula One. Well, he pulled it off. Most drivers cannot.
Yeah, I agree. Real quickly, it looks like BMW and McLaren are ahead in the KERS development. McLaren testing KERS today. BMW's been testing KERS. Renault has not. I'm very disappointed. Neither has the other teams. Toyota has admitted they're a little bit behind on the KERS. And Magneti Marelli comes out and says, we are a little slow on the KERS. So we'll see what happens, but a lot of this is going to affect the 2009 season. And I hope Flavio is out there cracking the whip, because we know where I stand on this. So anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with an outstanding and thorough Motorsports Mondial after this brief message.
This F1 Weekly podcast is brought to you by the Holiday Inn Select Indianapolis Airport. This Holiday Inn Select is a full-service, atrium-style hotel and conference center. While a guest there, make use of the free, high-speed internet access, indoor pool, and fitness center. Or enjoy the good life at the Chanteclair restaurant with its award-winning French cuisine and strolling violinist. Or race over to the spot of F1 Weekly's Listener Appreciation Friday social event, Benchwarmer Sports Bar. Catch all the race action on multiple TVs while enjoying the food and daily drink specials. The hotel is located directly across from the Indianapolis International Airport and provides free 24-hour shuttle service and guest parking. It's close to downtown and to the site of the 2007 Formula One United States Grand Prix, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, which makes this hotel an ideal choice for business, pleasure, and for the listeners of this podcast. Call for your reservation today to 1-317-244-6861 or 1-888-HOLIDAY or book online through www.hiselect.com. You know you want to.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king himself, Mr. Nasser Hamid. Nasser, welcome back to the studio.
Del olvido no ha partido, no condenemos al naufragio lo vivido, por nuestro ayer, por nuestro amor, yo te lo pido.
Greetings and racing regards. Today we have motor racing news from the land of camel to the land of kangaroo, and from the land of Pedro Rodriguez to the land of Takuma Sato and the much-discussed, the Brackley bombshell, the Honda pullout. Very, very sad. Very disappointing. Later in the program, instead of a goodie bag, we have Geisha Girl's Gucci bag with a lot of napkins. She's crying as my favorite Formula One team will no longer be on the grid. So sad. And what we will do is, we, because of time constraint, we will look at the initial foray of Honda in Formula One in the 60s, which was a very interesting time. But we shall start with some good news. This is very exciting, and I'm especially for American road racing fans. Big success for 17-year-old kid from Northern California, Mr. Alexander Rossi. In Sunday's Formula BMW World Finals in Mexico City, he started from second row and passed both pole sitter and local favorite Esteban Gutierrez to move into second place, and then hunted down race leader Michael Christensen of Denmark to become the first American to win the prestigious event. So this is very, very good, and big congratulations to him. I am very pleased to say that F1 Weekly spotted this rising talent last year, and you know we...
I remember the interview, and nice family.
Yeah, and actually, you know, interestingly, I was in the whatever hotel we were staying in Indianapolis. I was in the lobby where the Clark Rogers rocket were fired, if you recall.
And my rockets are always firing.
Yeah, and I was sitting in the lobby of that hotel when I sent him that email, because I think he had done very well in one of the races there. And I said, hey, I'm in NorCal too. You know, we want to talk to you. So it's very, I'm very impressed and very happy for him. And this victory will bring him the reward, you know, of a test drive in a Formula
One. Which has got to be exciting for
a
young man.
I mean, just to look at a Formula One machine.
Well, just to be able to get in there and sit in it.
Yeah.
And the horsepower.
Yeah. And absolutely, this is going to be great for him. And I hope this success, you know, also winning this year, he dominated the Formula BMW Americas. I will open doors to bigger and better opportunities. And he's the first American to win the North American Formula BMW Series. You know, previously it was called Formula BMW USA. Now it's called Formula BMW Americas.
Yeah, because they run them both all the way up and down.
Yeah. And Alexander Rossi's comment was about driving the F1 car, and I quote, "The very thought of driving a Formula One car makes me speechless," end of quote. I remember there was a Formula One Williams BMW in the lobby of a hotel in Indianapolis some years ago. And they had, I think, Compaq as a sponsor. I mean, I just looked and looked at that car for quite a while because it is the real machismo, as you would say. And I also, you know, spoke to his parents. He was not available, and I think he's doing the PRI show in Florida. But as soon as he comes back, we're going to get on the phone and do an interview with him and his dad. But it's a very good, hardworking, good American success story. I'm very happy for them. From success for Rossi, we move to success for Liuzzi, with Antonio Liuzzi. The opening round of the new Speed Car Series took place in Dubai, United Arab Emirates. With Antonio Liuzzi dominated the race from pole position, Heinz-Harald Frentzen, who once drove for Williams and Jordan, was second and recorded the fastest lap of the race. Johnny Herbert, the defending series champion, was fourth, Jacques Villeneuve sixth, and Jean Alesi 10th after colliding with another ex-F1 driver, Stefan Johansson. You know, Stefan Johansson is based in the U.S. Here in Southern California. Apparently his car overturned, but he's okay. And then the GP2 Asia Series was also in action in Dubai. Kamui Kobayashi of Japan was the big winner, winning the race from pole position and setting the fastest lap, and all this puts him in the championship lead. Italian Davide Valsecchi was second, and Spanish driver Roldan Rodriguez, who is dreaming of a Formula One, who's not even dreaming, but demanding a Formula One ride, was third. Jerome D'Ambrosio of Belgium was seventh, and I think we might hear more from this kid in the near future. He is on my racing radar. Gone from F1, but not forgotten, Sakon Yamamoto was eighth. He is on my racing sonar, submerged.
Beep, beep, beep. Must be nice to have sponsors so that you can continue to race.
Yeah, it's called Honda Motor Company, Toyota Motor Corporation, yeah. As in the case of Kamui Kobayashi.
Yeah, well, he's been in the news a lot. Didn't he? He did really well in one of the Japanese series too, didn't he?
Yeah, and these people, they all come through Japanese series and they, you know, race in Europe quite a bit. And we wish everybody all the best. What's so funny, Mr. Rogers?
Nothing, I just got a thought, but I'll save it for later.
No, let's hear it.
There's nothing.
Might be as tasty as not chicken really. Teriyaki.
No, it's not. It's not tasteful at all.
Okay.
Look who it's coming from.
Yeah. Okay, and talking of water, both the second Speed Car and GP2 races the following day were cancelled due to deluge in the desert. Imagine rain in Dubai. A rainy night in Arabia.
Well, that's what they say. When it rains in the desert, it rains. Gully washers.
Yeah.
It's where the term came from.
Yoss, the boss, is being a bad boy. He's got some
issues, too.
What
has happened to this man?
Wait till you hear him. There's more to it.
He needs to hit the coffee shops in Amsterdam and mellow out.
Not the green shops they have there, which I think they're closing down now. Greenhouses, they call them.
You mean
of ill
repute?
I don't know.
Ones where you could get the...
That's the coffee shop.
The smokeable.
The leaves.
That's the coffee shop, not the green shop. Okay. Come on, let's move on. We got motorsports.
Okay, Jos Verstappen, ex-Grand Prix driver from Holland, is facing possible jail time in Belgium. I believe he lives there. He's accused of assaulting his wife, the former car driver, Sophie Kumpen, sending threatening text messages. These texts are coming everywhere, man.
Come back and bite you.
Yeah, and slashing tires off her car. Couple is now separated and the court will announce its verdict on January 5th. This is not the first time the ex-Arrows and Benetton driver has been in trouble with the law. Back in 2000, he was found guilty of fracturing the skull of a man with whom he got into a fight over the use of a karting track, also in Belgium. This incident apparently took place in 1998. Verstappen avoided jail time thanks to an out-of-court settlement with the victim. My message to Jos, the boss, is OJ is looking for company, and we all know misery loves company. Sure. And you know, it's sad, I won't take names because we're not here to badmouth people, but if something like this comes in the news, we're going to report, you know. But a few years ago, a couple of Indy 500 winners in separate incidents were involved in similar issues also. And it's very, very sad when you see, a guy or a racing or a sports personality you admire and, you hold in such high esteem when they get down to this kind of thing.
Yeah,
and
it's a situation where a lot of these gentlemen should really look into anger management, therapy. just to, because we've been seeing it in a couple of other sports in North America recently, where people have been speaking out of turn and creating some ruckus.
Yeah. Bulgaria, another hotbed of motor racing heritage like Bahrain and Beijing, is now hoping to bring the $300 million Bernie and Max show to a track to be built in the north of the country near a town called Pleven. I say, please, be serious. This is amazing, you know, going to Bulgaria. When was the last time you heard Sofia as somebody, I'm going to a Grand Prix in Sofia.
It would be a nice place to go.
They have the money.
Where does Bulgaria get the money from? I'd like to know.
From their taxpayers.
Oh, wow.
Just like Bernie's new motto.
Yeah.
Taxpayers
get the people to pay for my show.
I'm surprised they haven't...
We get to pay for it twice. We get to pay for it with our taxes, and then we get to pay for it with our spending money to the sponsors. Yeah.
I am very surprised that Angola does not have a Grand Prix, because they have a lot of oil. And there is their company is called Sonangol, and they have some sponsorship in European racing. So this is
I'm sure Bernie's in negotiation.
Yes, the United States of America has no Grand Prix. Well, that sounds bizarre right from the get-go.
But the United States of America has a lot of other things going on. There's always NASCAR and NFL and too many things going on here.
Too many other places for that sponsorship money to go.
NASCAR.
Okay. Okay, Autosport Awards. This was interesting here. On Monday, Lewis Hamilton scored big.
Was it interesting?
Again?
For me, of course.
Of course, but I didn't...
But all these racing people...
There was nothing surprising.
Well... Who should be given the award? Heikki Kovalainen?
No, there was no podcast award.
Well, he might have won Best Supporting Actor.
Yeah, exactly. But then he'll probably lose out to DC. He crashed too many times. But anyway, Autosport Awards on Monday, Lewis Hamilton scored big. He won the International Racing Driver of the Year award. Do you agree with that award for him?
Not the greatest driver.
No, the question is...
Why not Sebastian Loeb for his fourth championship? You know, if you're going for international...
This is happening in England, Steve.
Still.
So you have issues. Okay.
I have many issues. No, I think, you know, he made a lot of mistakes.
He's the youngest world champion, dude.
Yeah, well. Did Fernando ever win this award?
I don't know. You may have to check. So. He probably did. And anyway, and then the British Prime Minister, Gordon Brown, presented him with Richard Seaman Trophy, courtesy of... BRDC.
Which is nice. I think that's perfectly appropriate.
Yeah, sure.
Has he been knighted yet?
Who?
Next weekend.
Next weekend he gets knighted?
Yeah, it will be. Don't take time. Sir, talking of knighthood, Sir Stirling Moss was made vice president of the club for life. First time this has been done. Now we come to, on the subject of Autosport Awards, famous last words. Martin Brundle was also at the show and said of the food, and I quote, "Wasn't that the worst meal we've ever had? We've ever been served at the Grosvenor House. I'm still picking the lamb out of my teeth." End of quote. I'm just hoping for his sake that he did not call the chef a pikey. Then he will be in a real meat grinder.
Well, let's not open that can of worms again.
His own verbiage. His own verbiage, not mine.
I hate to say it, but this guy is not very sophisticated.
And it's almost like he's making statements to get himself in the news.
Yeah, he doesn't need to. He was a good race car driver. He should be driving in speed car.
Oh, yeah? Let's go from Autosport Awards to more motor racing in Australia, Australian V8, shall we?
I like that.
Sounds good to me.
Wouldn't that be fair dinkum?
Yes, sir. But, you know, I could use a Phantom Caution.
Phantom Caution?
Yeah, we haven't had a good caution.
Yeah, well, the season's
tire fire.
You have to wait 6 weeks. So, yeah, it's coming up.
It's all really?
Yeah, Daytona
500. Already?
Something like that.
Wow.
Anyway, an Australian V8 season finale took place at Orion Park, which I believe is near Sydney. And if I'm wrong, please, somebody in Australia, let me know. Jamie Venkup was the big winner, clinching the championship with victory in race one over Vodafone teammate Craig Lowndes. Race two was won by Garth Tender. Victory in race three went to Rick Kelly. World Rally Championship record 11th win of the season for Sebastian Loeb. His victory gives Citroën Manufacturers Championship for the first time since 2005. Loeb has now won all of World Rally Championship regular events at least once. Very impressive. Ford driver from Finlandia, Jari Matti Latvala, looked set for victory but lost it to Loeb by 2.7 seconds. In the final stage of the Wales Rally GB, Denny Sordo of Spain was third in another Citroën. Valentino Rossi, the motorcycle doctor, was 12th in the Stobart 4.
And I'll have an update from our listener, J Street, on the WRC activities, of course, in the Wales Rally of Great Britain, and, of course, the outstanding feat of Mr. Sebastian Loeb.
Okay, explain to me, Clark Rogers, how Citroën hasn't won the Manufacturers' Championship since 05 when Loeb has won the championship the last 4 years?
Well, there's a Drivers' Championship and a Constructors' Championship.
So his teammate's been doo-doo?
It happens. Not only that, but they weren't even a works team last year. Citroën came, quit, and they had a private team running Citroën with support, of course, in the back. But and Sebastian Loeb won it on with that. And then, of course, Citroën came back with the C4. There's some tough competitions in WRC, and it's been an outstanding season. But Sebastian Loeb is a talent to be reckoned with. Please continue, sir.
Okay, now we have some F3 news. Nico Hülkenberg, I should say GP2 news. Nico Hülkenberg, another rising German talent, has signed with ART to move up to GP2 for 2009. And I'm really looking forward to the Nico Hülkenberg versus Romain Grosjean battle.
This is going to be exciting. This is going to be some cage rattling.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, I'd like to see Buemi and that those three together would be
interesting. Yeah. Buemi and Hülkenberg have raced together in Formula BMW before, but I tell you, if Nico Hülkenberg starts rattling Romain Grosjean's cage, it's not going to be good for him, because Flavio is not too happy with Romain because he made quite a few mistakes. He does have the speed, there's no question about it. But I think he'll be more mature, and I think Hülkenberg will probably catch up to Romain Grosjean halfway through the season. And, well, let's see what happens. The Franco-German pairing won the F3 Euro Series title this year. ART is co-owned by Nicola Todd, and we all know who that is, and his partner Frederick Vessor said of Nico, and I quote, "There is no need to give the reasons that convinced us to continue our collaboration with Nico. His records speak for themselves. He is a fast and talented driver, but also a young man who is very well balanced." This next sentence is important. "He has strong race intelligence and positive human relationships." And I think we know a few drivers who have negative human relationships. End of quote. What this means is every time Frederick says, "Voila," Nico says, "Jawohl." That's called keeping harmony in a team.
Well, so, not only that, but if he can build relationships, it makes the team that much stronger because everybody's pulling for him. When you're kind of a jerk driver, you know, you can kind of alienate members of your team, and that doesn't work well for you long term.
Yeah, we don't like jerk drivers.
And you know what happens? It's a small community. A lot of people who are in with Nico today, you know, 3 years down the road, they may be in a Formula One team. And if you piss off somebody, a chief engineer or whatever, team principal,
right,
and he is in a position of influencing the driver decision, trust me, no matter how good you are, you're not getting there. And it happens in every series.
It makes you wonder if the guy from GP2 did that at some point in his career.
Pantano?
Yeah, Pantano.
Pantano's problem, you know, he doesn't have bags of money to take it to a team.
Yeah.
And that's a very sad case. You know, the guy has won the championship.
And he didn't get a big sponsor earlier in his career.
Yeah. He had very good backing, but they dragged him from karting to Formula One in 18 months. That's screwing, screwing somebody.
It was too much.
Yeah, that's.
But Pantano is bitter, and he was talking about Bruno Senna. Well, what does he offer? I've got all this, all these championships. He's got nothing. So you could tell he's becoming a bitter man inside.
Well, the other thing to remember, though, is what Bruno's got is the right last name.
Well, not only that, but Bruno's out in the cold right now because he was looking for a drive at Honda.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens.
But he's done a good job. He's won races on his own.
And he has won races.
And he won a race in his first year of GP2, which is very, very important.
I agree.
You know, that's another thing. What happens to the test drives that our two American friends were supposed to get?
Well, I was going to bring that up later in the program,
okay,
Stephen.
Cool. I'm glad somebody's keeping on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, from GP2 to F3 Euro Series, all Red Bull-supported drivers will have Volkswagen power next season. Red Bull also sponsors Seat in World Touring Car Championship and Audi in DTM. Both brands are part of VW Group, which in part is like part of a Porsche group, but that's another story. German driver Marco Wittmann will drive for Berlin-based Mucke Motorsports in F3 Euro Series next season. And we also interviewed Marco Wittmann earlier this year, if anybody wants to go back and listen to his conversation. The 19-year-old German was second in this year's Formula BMW Europe Series with 11 podium finishes from 16 races.
Was he at the World Championships?
Was he in Mexico? I don't think so. He's moving up to... This was his second year.
Oh, okay.
So there was no point for him to be there. And plus, it's also very expensive, you know.
Yeah, it's a trek.
Johnny Chicardo Jr. They should just call this kid Johnny Guitar. Son of Venezuelan motorcycle legend is auditioning with different teams and plans to compete in this series also, which would be a 3 Euro series. Chicardo Jr. was third in this year's ATS German Formula 3 Championship with 82 points, just 1 point behind second-place finisher, another Latin American driver, Sebastian Saavedra from Colombia. And Saavedra is a very quick driver. He's been pretty impressive, but he needs a little anger management and attitude adjustment. Otherwise, he'll be his own worst enemy in racing. Championship was won by Belgian driver Frederik Verfisch. British F3 News, young British driver Max Chilton. This is pretty interesting, Clark. Max Chilton will drive in the series in 2009 for Carlin Motorsports. Max is 17 years old and has already done 2 years in this series. So getting into F3 at 15, very impressive if you can pull it off. Last year at Monza, he became the youngest pole sitter and now wants to dethrone this year's champion, Jaime Alguersuari from Spain, as the youngest British F3 champion. And I still think, you know, Jaime Alguersuari and this New Zealand kid, Brandon Hartley, I will not be surprised. Hartley is doing some testing for Formula One because Mark Webber is not available, but they are also on my radar, not on the sonar.
I understand.
In Formula One news, it is reported that Lenovo will leave Williams for McLaren. Lenovo is what used to be the PC division of IBM. It is now a Chinese company based in Raleigh, North Carolina. And maybe our man in the area, Jackson, can update on how good the Mongolian beef is in the local Chinese restaurants. That's my
good work, man.
That's my favorite, Stephen, with steamed rice.
Me too.
Extra onions.
I'm ready for some tonight.
Okay, now we come to Honda says sayonara to Formula One. I might have some personal thoughts and look at the history and what they've been doing. And this is what we call the Brackley bombshell. May I proceed with your express written consent?
Absolutely, sir. You may proceed.
Thank you. Most car manufacturers are facing a decline in sales of more than 30%, especially in the crucial and largest car market, which is the U.S. While the local industry has become a basket case in D.C., situation is not all that rosy for their foreign competitors. Toyota has temporarily shut down their newly opened Tundra factory in Texas. Honda will do the same at their Swindon factory in England next month, which I believe will be shut down for like 50 days.
Correct. That's what I was alluding to earlier in the show.
But nobody suspected the surprise and shocking announcement from Tokyo that Honda was pulling the plug on their Formula One program with immediate effect. No procrastination here. The Earth Dream is now a racing nightmare for Ross Brawn and 700-plus employees in Brackley. For Jenson Button, dishes are done, and there is no happy meal in sight in this belt-tightening economy the world over. But like we said, you know, we hope somebody finds this franchise and he has a ride. But for all practical purposes, you know, with all the new talent coming, I just cannot see poor Jenson Button getting into a ride which would be a competitor enough to make him a Formula One world champion. But on the positive side, he has made a lot of money. So,
well, and some of these drivers are going to have to cut their pay, just like Jeff Gordon's going to.
Sure. I'm surprised you read about him.
Huh? Yeah. Is that a stutter or what?
Oh, yeah.
Well, the majority of racers make so much money in endorsements anyway that they really don't need their salaries.
Honda, very understandably, and as stated by their CEO, must protect their core business, which anybody who has owned any of their products would know is building very reliable, economical, and quality products. Their MotoGP and U.S. racing involvement will remain intact, at least for the time being. Honda has pledged to help the buyer, if any can be found, before the 2009 season opener in Land Down Under. There is talk of Ferrari engines, thanks to Ross Brawn's connection at his former employer, who will venture as a team owner into the wonderland that is F1, only time will tell. David Richards, we discussed earlier, of ProDrive, was awarded the 12th franchise, but customer car road derailed that program. He is not only a serious, performance-oriented person, but also a previous team manager when this outfit was smoking billions of dollars as BAR Honda. And bar none, this is strictly my opinion and the way I look at things, this is where Honda's problem started when they came back into Formula One. After winning four consecutive world titles in the back of a McLaren with Ayrton Senna and Alain Prost, this very proud and rich in racing heritage company went into a partnership with a former ski instructor and his talented world championship winning student who, after winning the championship, was walking away from the very same team where Honda enjoyed much success in a driver's championship with Nelson Piquet in 1987 into an unknown and maiden F1 design from the mind of Adrian Reynard. This was a recipe for disaster before any success could be served. The team's only win came in changing conditions and misfortunes of others in Budapest in 2006. There was no encore of their Hungarian dance. Last week the music stopped, forcing Button and his phantom teammate to look for seats. Do you agree with me on the last thing, that going with the bar program was not a good idea, Reynard and all that?
Possibly, and in the way that program started, and Villeneuve and Craig Pollock, I mean, and the big thing is when they predicted that they would win right out of the box, the dominoes started falling, and look what it did to Jacques Villeneuve.
Yeah, again, he made a lot of money. You know, you mentioned about when they predicted about winning the first race. I don't know the name of the gentleman, but I was reading an interview recently with some senior engineer, technical guy, mechanic, whatever you want to call it, who was at Tyrrell. That was the team they had bought for many, many years. And they asked him, why did he quit? Because they wanted to keep him when the Adrian Reynard people showed up. He said, I just did not like his attitude. He said he walked in here very arrogant and said to him that we get into every series by winning our very first race. So he knew that this thing, you know, is out of control. And it's pretty sad. And you remember the schmazel they have about the coloring of the car?
Yeah.
One was blue and one was white. So it just...
And I like I still have pictures of where one side of the car is 555 cigarettes.
Yeah.
And the other side of the car is Lucky Strikes.
Yeah.
It was split right down the middle.
Yeah. And I remember the comment from Jackie Stewart that when you come to motor racing or Formula One at that level, you don't want to rattle FIA's cage or FOM's cage initially. Down the road when you have won 60 races, that's another story. But now we take a quick look right, look left on Honda in Formula One. Remember that used to be one of their slogans too?
Yep.
On the car, look left, look right.
Mm-hmm.
And lookies and all sorts of... They were very creative, there was no question about it, but, you know, creativity and winning races are two different things. Honda's first foray into Formula One was in 1964 with Ronnie Bucknam from the U.S. as the driver. The team made its Grand Prix debut in the 1964 German Grand Prix at the 14.2-mile-long Nürburgring. The team's American connection continued in the oil trap for engine oil, which was then required by regulations but overlooked by Honda engineers. So they modified a Coca-Cola can to do the job. And you can see some pictures of this also on some racing websites. But things still did not go better even with Coke. Bucknam crashed after steering failure, resulting in some injuries, and he required some stitches also. And rest of the season remained scoreless. Talking of Ronnie Bucknam, Honda, you know, what they did is some years ago, his son is also racing, and they sponsored him as a gratitude to Ronnie Bucknam, a ride in the Indy 500, so which was a very nice gesture on their part. For 1965, there was more American flavor in the team as Richie Ginther was added as teammate to Bucknam. Ginther gave the team their first ever point from his sixth place finish in the Belgian Grand Prix at Spa. In the final race of the season, which was also the final race for 1.5-liter engine, Ginther scored his, team's, and Goodyear's first Grand Prix win. And unfortunately, Ginther never won a race again. And you know, it's an interesting thing. There was a time in his life when he was working at a car dealership in Southern California, where one of the mechanics was Phil Hale, and one of the salesmen was Bernard Cahier, Cahier, the famous French photographer who passed away recently. So it really is a very small community.
Especially in those days.
Especially back then.
Even now, you know, I mean, you look at Max and Bernie, they go back 50, 40, 50. It's, I mean, it's scary, but it's good. Keep it in the family, you know. In 1966, Honda was winless and replaced both American drivers for 1967. Their main hope was the 1964 world champion, John Surtees. He gave their new machine RA300, which was built by Lola and dubbed as a Hondola. A dramatic debut win at Monza in a close finish over Jack Brabham. And this is quite a finish which can be seen on YouTube. It's one of the great finishes. You know, actually, this, if I'm not mistaken, you know, on Speed TV when they do the start of a race and there's a black and white commentary and a guy saying, I've never seen the finish of a race. If I'm not mistaken, it's Murray Walker doing the commentary of the 67, this race, Italian Grand Prix. Check it out on YouTube, very interesting. In 1968, Honda built an air-cooled magnesium car, which was lighter and not well-proven in testing, and Surtees refused to race in it. The team entered this car in the French Grand Prix at Rouen for local driver Joe Schlesser. Tragedy struck right after the start as he crashed in the rain, resulting in a fiery inferno from which there was no escape for the driver. And Joe Schlesser was a friend of Guy Ligier, who would enter Formula One in the 70s. Jacques Lafitte, among other people, drove for him. The JS in all his cars was for his friend Joe Schlesser. The ghost of Schlesser's name would haunt Honda 20 years later at Monza. In the 1988 Italian Grand Prix, Joe's nephew, Jean-Louis Schlesser, tangled with Senna's McLaren late in the race, sidelining Senna. The only race that season that was not won by Honda-powered McLaren, and I'm sure most of our listeners would recall, this race took place only a few weeks after Enzo Ferrari's death, and when Senna retired, it was a Ferrari 1-2 with Berger leading.
Exactly. Michele
Alboreto was second, and Honda pulled out of Formula 1 at that time, at the end of the 1968 season. And for time consideration, we won't be talking about when they came back in the 80s and 90s and all the success, maybe some other time. But I do want to, you know, I was looking at this Rouen track, this tragedy in 1968. I read a lot about this when I was a kid. It was big news, the way poor guy died. And I was reading, you know, Schlesser's wife was at the race. It was in the rain. This is the race where Jackie Aix scored his first Grand Prix win. And I read somewhere in a book that she was in the pit area with the young daughter, and in all that confusion, she ended up where the car was on fire. So it was like a really bad scene for the whole Formula One fraternity. But I printed, which I would like to show you, a map of the Rouen circuit, and this is incredible, you know. If I have the time, I'm going to request my Daisy driver, Mr. Peter Brazier, that maybe if you go to Rouen and look at this corner, Virage du Nouveau Monde, is world, world famous. Actually, the very first calendar I did, Motorsports Memories, Maiden Wins, it had Dan Gurney making a turn in his Porsche at Nouveau Monde, if you remember. And we have names like Virage Samson, Virage du Paradis. So moi, would very much like to be at this place.
Oh, la belle vie de la France!
Yeah, and on that, the happy news is I've been granted, after some questioning of proof of coverage, media credentials for Autosport Show. So now I'm legit and official.
Thank F1 Weekly for that, Nasser.
No, I would like to thank Clark Rogers personally.
That's a good idea.
First, and then...
You can buy me lunch this Friday.
Oh, sure, no problem. There is a Taco Bell right next to where I work.
Excellent.
And the in-flight burritos have landed there.
Yeah, at this stage, I would even accept the in-flight burrito.
You are very welcome.
Just take three cheese and beans and eat one and have two for later.
Thank you, Stephen. Keep an open mind.
And don't travel in my car after that.
Exactly. Thank you very much for another fantastic,
outstanding
Motorsports Mondial with the sad news of Honda pulling out. But we will survive and go on.
Okay, Gloria Gaynor.
So there you have it. We'll take a quick break and come back with the wrap-up and, of course, the forum updates. We'll be back in 60 seconds.
Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And before I go into the wrap-up and the forum updates, which are very, very important, I've got the WRC report from our dedicated listener, Mr. J. Streets. It's all over now, but the crying. Rally Great Britain was the last event on the calendar. It was all about Citroën, with Sebastian Loeb already the driver's champion. The only thing left to fight for was the manufacturer's bragging rights. The Rally GB is typically cold and wet, but this year the extreme cold brought light snow and ice, causing the shortening of many stages and the all-out cancellation of the first stage. The normally easygoing Sebastian Loeb was vocal in his dislike of the conditions and the tire regulations that don't allow for grooving the tires to match the conditions, which was changed a number of years ago. Day one saw Ford's title hopes slip away when on stage five, Ford's number one, Hirvonen, rolled his focus only to rejoin, but way back on the leaderboard. On the final stage, run with light, Subaru's Atkinson rolled hard, shearing off his car's roof and necessitating a trip to the hospital for a checkout. The real story of the day on day one was Sebastien Ogier, Citroën's recently crowned production WRC champion, getting his first ride in a full works car. So, sort of like Rossi, he gets his bonus. Ogier, yeah, who was in the WRC up. B team or the Junior Series, gets promoted and he gets a ride in the WRC.
The big car.
Yeah, the Machismo car. Day two, Citroën's Danny Sordo had some blazing speed on the opening stages, setting two fastest stage times, but wisely backed off with the manufacturer's title on the line. Loeb also had a pair of fast times and was never out of the top five all day long. At the end, Ford's number two, Latvala, managed to hang on to the lead, setting two fastest stage times on his own, but his lead is just 7 seconds to Loeb. Day three, a dramatic end to the season. Loeb drew a time penalty, and this was written about big time. Loeb drew a time penalty. They said he jumped the start, but kept his cool to come back on the final stage of the final event to take the win from Ford's Latvala and the title for Citroën. Five-time MotoGP rider, of course, Valentino Rossi spoke about earlier in the Motorsports Mondial, was competing in only his third rally, brought his car home in 12th, and was awarded the Abu Dhabi trophy for spirit of the rally. You got to give him something.
Yeah.
And he did really good. He finished...
Well, considering 12th in really what amounts to his third rally in what were less than favorable driving conditions.
Exactly.
That's pretty impressive.
And Rossi was proud himself of accomplishing that. Finishing in those kind of conditions was an outstanding job. And Ford, they just had nothing but great things to say about the MotoGP champion. The final results bring Sebastian Loeb to 47 victories and 5 drivers' titles in only 6 years on the calendar. Jeez. Sebastian's closest rival in overall wins is El Matador, Carlos Sainz, with just 26 wins. It won't be long before Seb has twice as many as the retired Carlos. Loeb has been often referred to as the Michael Schumacher of gravel. I propose it is time to start calling Michael Schumacher the Sebastian Loeb of Formula One. Keep up the good work, Jay, and happy holidays from all. There you have it. The final WRC report of 2008. So, Stephen, forum updates now.
Forum updates from our buddy Yay. And this week's news from the F1 Weekly Forum. Our new posters this week are Pedro's Fours and Craig Leach. Welcome to the forum. Right now, the forum's hottest discussion topics include Honda out of F1, what's to become of F1, and mixed message from Max. All these threads and some others are discussing the future of F1 with all the rule changes, money problems, and team withdrawals. There is also some Christmas fun happening, so why not come and visit us on the forum? MP422 Crazy is trying to get another series of Bat Racer going. As of Wednesday, we only need three more to take part. It's a F1 Weekly private game, so if you are a Bat Racer newbie, we will help and guide you through. It's great fun and only needs a few minutes a day to compete. And that's all for now. Keep up the good posting, everybody. And remember, don't close the tab. Click on the Yahoo ads. Thanks, Peter.
Keep up the good work, Peter. Yay. What a fine gentleman he is, indeed. And, of course, he'll be having lunch, dinner, breakfast with Nasser Hamid in the month of, January, February? So it's going to be exciting. They're going to be at the Autosports Show, and Nas is going to be mingling with some of our longtime
F1 Weekly familia.
Exactly. And that's a big familia. And, of course, we'll have one of those big group hugs. So there you have it. Real quickly, let's go right to the wrap-up. Motorsports Memories 2009, powered by Turbo Calendar, is going fast. $15.95 plus shipping and handling. Of course, just go to the merchandise page. Just go to our banner right at the top where the flash is and just click on the Buy Me Now button. Outstanding calendar. And, of course, it makes us just a little bit of money so we can get things refreshed, buy new cords for the equipment, all this stuff. Costs money, and some of us are very, very poor, trust me. So there you have it. Everybody, please buy a calendar because we certainly need the help. So thanks a lot. Real quickly, I want to thank Marin Karting. They're proud to organize and support the 2009 Jim Russell Northern California Rotax Challenge. Marin Karting offers CRG carts, engines, and parts for all carts, engine service, driver coaching, and track side support. For more information, contact Marin Karting at 415-898-0999, and you can actually call them if you're local in the area, or just drive over and pick up a Motorsports Memories calendar. Of course, you can also check them out at www.marinkarting.com. Nas, a quick comment.
Yeah, if Adrian is back from La Conca, Italy, and his trip to Barcelona, we'd like to hear from him and see how it went.
We expect the full report and pictures.
Very good. Thank
exactly.
You.
So there you have it. And if he does give us some good pictures, I'll post them on the forum so everybody knows what's happening in La Conca. We want to mention our MySpace and Facebook sites. Of course, just do a search for F1 Weekly and add us as a friend. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, email us at info@F1Weekly.com. There you have it. We've wrapped up another podcast. Nasser, Stephen, David Tapia, our executive producer, and of course, Toby Dawes, working as hard as ever in the wintry state of New York. I want to say thank you to everyone and all the listeners. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Good
night.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport. A blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.